It's Keith Tomasek, and you're listening to The Inadequate Life, a podcast about the creative process and people whose lives depend upon it. On today's show, Christina Walkinshaw. Christina is a talented writer who says she just started writing something by herself in her bedroom one night, and it's turned into an internet sensation. She's a comedian and a writer who dates men and then writes about the dates on her popular blog. All that and more coming up on The Inadequate Life. Hey, thanks so much for joining me today, wherever you are, walking the dog, on the treadmill, or like me, in bed, falling asleep. That's what I do. I listen to the podcasts and then kind of pass out. Hey, by the way, before I get into the podcast, as always, I have to thank our sponsor, Karen Hartwick at Tea Leaves. That's in Stratford, Ontario. You can go to tealeaves.com, or if you're in Stratford, book a tea tasting or drop in to experience the world's best, freshest, and most exotic loose leaf teas with Karen Hartwick, Canada's tea sommelier. She's a sponsor of the show, and I really appreciate it because it wouldn't be happening without Stratford Tea Leaves. So on today's show, Christina, an amazingly talented young woman who's just seeing so much success in the last year, and it's just paying off all her years of hard work. As you, when you listen to the podcast and the interview, you'll see that she does have a routine. Her writing is a routine. Her writing is a ritual, and it's that sort of ritual and the routine in her life that's allowed her the freedom to do some pretty amazing and creative and exploratory things with her writing. That's coming up in a little bit. But before that, you know, part of the whole podcast is about me and my family life and my attempt to be creative and raising a family and all that sort of stuff. And something happened the other day with cold that kind of relates to what Christina does, in the sense that some people might perceive it to be deviant, or maybe that's a bit rich, just bad behavior, because Christina does write about some really personal things. She talks about having sex with people. How much more personal? And some people would consider that to be going too far, or pushing the boundaries, which is exactly what my 7-year-old did in his class the other day. He pushed the boundaries, not, you know, that way, of course. But nevertheless, we, you know, get a message home from the principal one day that he behaved badly in class, and he talked and was disruptive to the other kids. And you know, if the teacher sends you that note, it's pretty bad, right? Because usually they can just take care of that in the class. And not that we're worried, my wife and I, Susie, about, you know, every kid gets out of line a bit, but Cole tends to be a bit loud anyway. So when we're trying to monitor this situation, because, you know, you want him to be a good kid in school and respect other people's learning space, and you can be loud on the playground. That's what we tell him. Go on the playground. That's where you can be loud. Anyway, so we have a little talk with him. Everything's great. And he tells us he was, you know, "I'm sorry, Daddy. I won't do it again. I will only make jokes at the playground," and that sort of stuff. The next day, he comes home, and we get another note from the teacher saying he's gone to the principal's office, which is horrible, right? I mean, the principal's office, that's a big deal. I remember when I went to the principal's office. Anyway, we were racked with guilt. What do you do, you know? So instead of things getting under control, things escalated, and that was tough. It was a difficult thing as parents to realize, okay, what are we going to do? The answer is really nothing. What are you going to do? He is who he is. But we did have a good talk with him on the weekend. And 3 days later, he came home with a little certificate saying he was a star student. So we were so excited about that. Anyway, all that to say, Christina Walkinshaw was a star student. And she does push the boundaries a bit, but all for the purposes of good fun and good writing and some laughs. I really had a great time with her, and a lot of guys have. Sorry, I couldn't resist that. Anyway, enjoy the podcast. Here it is, Christina Walkinshaw. So we have a couple of things in common. One of them is we both went to Carleton.
Yes.
What did you do there?
I went there for journalism.
Did you?
Yeah, in my first year. But then obviously I got kicked out of my program because I learned how to drink in my first year at Carleton, as many people do. So then my grades kind of slipped. And then I spent my second through fourth year in psychology and film studies.
I did film studies too.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
I did a double major, film studies in English. And I kind of, I thought I wanted to go into journalism, but then I started hanging around with the journalism students, and I'm like, I don't think I want to hang around with these people.
Oh, well, you know, in my second year, because I love writing, right? In my second year, I started to do stand-up. So I was still writing, only instead of writing articles for the school paper, I was, you know, writing about vibrators and dildos.
The Charlton.
Important stuff.
The school paper, the Charlton. So here's something. I'm glad you mentioned you were writing at that point, because I heard that you've always been a writer. You've kept a diary. But you're also a stand-up comedian, and stand-ups tend to write what they perform on stage. So I'm curious how you sort of perceive yourself in your heart. Do you perceive yourself to be a writer first or a comedian first?
I'd say a writer first, for sure.
Yeah.
I love writing. Well, because, okay, when I first started doing comedy back in Ottawa, you're playing with those buttons a lot. Am I talking too loud?
No. I'm
too raspy?
No.
This is my morning after Friday night voice, so... Two shows and then a lot of beer. So it's kind of raspier than normal. Anyways, whatever. When I first started doing comedy in Ottawa, I was like 19 years old, 1920. And unlike Toronto today, Ottawa had no open mics, like none. So you got to call Yuck Yucks like the first Tuesday of every month, and you got to sign up for 2 Wednesday nights. So you got 2 amateur nights a month. So obviously I had way more time to write than I did perform.
Cool.
So I always feel like writing is my comfort zone.
And when did you start keeping a diary?
I've had a diary since I was like 7 years old. My first one was a Judy Jetson diary that I got at the Great America theme park in like Santa Clara, California.
And do you know what inspired you to have that relationship with your life and paper?
I don't know. I think I just had really, like really, really cute handwriting just right off the bat in grade
so
one.
Funny.
You remember when you had like the double space notebooks, the ones with
cursive writing,
the little
sure.
lines in between, the little dotted lines? I just had really cute handwriting, and so I really wanted to write a lot because I just liked the way my letters looked.
And how's your writing now?
I think it's still pretty sweet.
And do you when you write like for your blog, do you write on a typewriter or do you write by hand at first?
I make all my notes in a notebook first. I like to brainstorm. I even like the old fashioned brainstorm. Sometimes I'll still do webs. Do you remember webs?
No. Oh, sure. With the like, thing in
you
know, the middle, and
you put something in the middle, and then you put all like little spider
course,
webs around it,
yeah,
like to get all your ideas in. I love doing it. I can be very immature when I write.
No, but that's a technique. That's a technique we teach students in when you're a thought map, when you're going to be doing something, a piece of work. You probably learned that somewhere. In
oh, totally.
Or in a book.
Well, that's the thing is, like with a Weber, when you're kind of writing in a childish way, it doesn't feel like you don't feel any pressure. So then all these ideas come out because it's not like you're standing in front of a computer with a deadline and getting all freaked out.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, like here's my notebook with like Lance Bass on the cover. And I'm just like having fun writing. So then I get all my ideas out in the notebook and then I take it to my laptop
and
lock
down.
Myself into a coffee shop and or bar and I write.
And you go away from your house to write.
Yeah, I find that it's really hard to write at home. At home is like it's my den of slack. As if I could take that term
that's
from the
cool.
movie Reality Bites, but it's a den of slack. Like I do nothing at home. That's why I love home, but I can't get work done there. I have to leave the house.
Yeah.
I'll do anything. I'll procrastinate big time.
That's what I'm doing right now. I'm procrastinating.
I know,
even
right?
as I speak with you, I'm right.
If I didn't procrastinate though, I would like never have anything clean in my apartment.
But at the end of the day, you're not a procrastinator because you actually get it done. At the end, you're putting the puck in the net and you're getting that blog up. And
oh yeah, I do. I make I post a blog every Tuesday. That's my self-proclaimed like weekly deadline. And I really try to get it done by Monday night because if I don't get it done Monday night and I pull one of those like very high school or university student moves where like, oh, I'll just get up in the morning and do it. Like, and I do that with packing sometimes too. And that's why I'm in London, Ontario. And I forgot face wash and socks because I'll pack in the morning. And then obviously I don't do a very good job.
Yeah.
And besides which, if I don't get my blog done on Monday night and I try to sleep with that deadline still like lurking in my brain, I have a terrible sleep anyways.
Yeah.
I can't sleep. It's really restless. And I'm like, oh.
And how long have you been blogging for?
I started this blog in July. So, and now it's, what month is it? That's not good. I don't know that. It's
May,
April.
May.
Almost
yeah,
May.
April, May. So almost a year.
So almost a year.
And what other bloggers inspired you?
I don't really know. Like, I didn't really, like, this blog came about like a total fluke because I joined Tinder because I was like, oh.
So let's explain to folks what Tinder is. So Tinder is you never know, right?
That's true.
Tinder's an online app where people can meet each other based on their Facebook profile pictures, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of like Grindr for straight people. It's kind of like going out for dates with people that might not be necessarily be looking for a relationship.
Sure.
But it is. It's kind of like a cross between Hot or Not and Grindr, and it takes your Facebook profile pictures. It shows you your mutual interests on Facebook and your mutual friends on Facebook, which makes it less creepy from a girl's perspective.
Of course. Oh, this person is friends
with
that.
Because I'm like, oh, you're friends with Sarah or whatever. And so it's kind of like, it just does make it less creepy. So I go on these dates or whatever. I decided I'm going to go on Tinder for 1 week. So a different guy every day.
Oh, a different guy a day. All right. Yeah.
For a straight week. So I did that, right? So on the fifth date, the guy seems like actually pretty cool, pretty normal, pretty my speed, right? So I just go, how's Tinder working out for you? And he goes, I've only been on one date and she was pretty shy. And then he's like, how about you? And I go, well, the first guy drank 3 times faster than I did, which is no easy chore.
Sure.
The second guy was so young that I just ended up setting him up with my friends.
Too young for you.
Yeah, he was nice. He was too young. The third guy showed up high on like cocaine and Adderall on a Monday lunch.
I love that you know it was not only cocaine, it was cocaine.
He dropped the Adderall too. I guess that's the okay one. I don't know, whatever. I don't do drugs. And then the fourth guy was he had to go and drop off money to his boss at Pizza Pizza on King West at midnight on a Tuesday.
Sure.
It was really fishy. I think he was doing a drug deal.
So you were like, this is crazy.
And yeah. So it was like, four weird things. And then I get this like good guy. So I shoot out all this stuff. I'm like, this is what's happened to me. Boom, 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 boom. And then he looks at me and he goes, my name is not really Tom. Made it up. I made up a fake Gmail account to get a fake Facebook, to get fake Tinder so I could get fake dates like with you. I was like, oh my God. I was like, why am I not writing about this?
Yeah.
That was when I decided to write.
So you've been on all these dates. What are some of the craziest things that have happened?
Okay. I think the craziest thing I did, for me at least. So this guy showed up my Tinder box, right? Because he had been in the Toronto area.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he's like 3,000 miles away. He's in England. And then I just write in, and then I write to him. I'm like, oh, don't worry. You dodged a bullet with me. I blog about my Tinder dates. So then he goes on and he starts reading them all on the tube that day. And then he writes me later and he goes, oh my God, I read all of your Tinder dates today. And I just think they're hilarious. And I loved them. And then we kept on kind of chatting back and forth. And yeah. And so he was like, I really want to go on a date with you. I'm going to be in Boston, New York, and Chicago in the fall. He's like, I'd even be willing to pay for you to come to one of these cities. And so I was like, oh my God, it was kind of crazy. I was like, I can't just like get on an airplane. First of all, I don't want to feel like a hooker, like somebody paying for me. But then I can't really like afford to just like go to Boston for the night. But there was only one day I could do because I had shows and holidays and stuff. So I was like, well, I could go to Boston on like the Wednesday. And so he's like, okay, well, I'll get your flight for you and I'll put it on points. So now I'm not a hooker. I'm a points hooker. Awesome. And so, yeah, I went to Boston for the night. I got my own Airbnb because I was too, like, I don't want to just, like, assume I'm going to sleep at his house. I've never even met him before.
Sure, yeah.
Right? And so I checked into my Airbnb, and then I just was in Boston for the day, and I went on a date just like I would in my own city.
Yeah.
But I think that was one of the biggest heart attacks I ever had in my life, was just, like, going to Boston for a day. Like, I couldn't even believe that was happening. And it was such a good date. It was so fun. He had read the whole blog. He knew I liked chicken wings. He knew I liked craft beer. He researched the best places to get this stuff in Boston. He was a Gemini. Everything was just
he
easy.
Was a Gemini. How it long did fun. You spend together?
Just like 24 hours. That was it, man.
And how
I went
did it
in,
end?
Met him around 5 o'clock. What was that?
How did it end?
The next morning.
And then,
it was great. And we still keep in contact.
Yeah,
we're still buddies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. Because I was like, and when I wrote the blog, I was kind of like, oh, well, the only reason I wouldn't sleep with him was because I'd be like scared of what people would think, right?
Yeah.
But I was like, that's a dumb reason not to sleep with somebody. It's like, I was having fun and it was a 1 day vacation fling, but I had a great time and it was so fun and it was living some life.
Dude. Yeah, yeah.
It was living life.
What number was he? So if we want to read about
he was number 23.
Oh, that's pretty early on. Wow.
Yeah, 23. Yeah. He was only the second dude I slept with.
When I first moved to Winnipeg to work for CBC, actually, I didn't know a soul. So I put an ad in the newspaper thing because I wanted to. I didn't know anybody. And I had to have this rule about not dating people I work with.
Right.
I don't know why I have that rule, but it's served me well.
It's good
so
if you can
far.
Keep it, man.
Yeah.
It's good if you can keep it.
So, and that goes back because as I was preparing for this interview, I thought, why did I even get the idea to do that? And it came back to me that in 1984, I used to produce a radio show with John Oakley, who's a big guy in the Toronto Morning Man at 640, I guess. And we did a date thing in the Village Voice in New York, because the Village Voice actually had that back
then.
Very
cool.
So we got the Village Voice to write a dating ad for John, and then we called on air the girls that replied, And then three of them got to actually have a date with John in New York. He flew to New York. So we kind of, I was sort of in that whole world. And then when I moved to Toronto and I didn't know anybody there either, I did the, at that time it was the phone thing. This was before Lab Alive. So I kind of get, what?
Oh, it's just funny because, like, I feel like nobody uses those chat lines anymore because we have internet dating. But me and my girlfriends in Vancouver, when we were like 14 and 15, we used to call those chat lines.
That's kind of weird. But it's,
you know, I don't think you guys had any idea how young we were.
But the night, at least I love that because I could, I'm pretty, because of my background in radio, I can tell a lot about people by their voice.
Right.
Like, I can really tell a lot about people.
Really? Could you tell I was 13? No, I was kidding. I was in Vancouver. It was probably a different hotline.
It was a different thing, yeah.
The night exchange.
That is weird. Anyway, so I'm totally cool with it. But there are people who see these kind of apps and even online dating,
yeah,
and they're still sort of freaked out by it, you know?
This is my first time ever online dating because it's like I never had an urge to go on, like, I don't know, Match.com or because I don't really want to find the one.
No, no, yeah. And the worst thing is when I got to London, I'm like a single guy again, don't know anyone. And one of the guys at the station said, well, there's a lot of bars. I'm sure you'll do well in the bars. And I'm like, yeah, I don't really meet people in bars. That's not my thing either.
Right.
So I totally get the concept of an app that's going to help you hook up with someone.
I feel like, well, Tinder's kind of like being in a bar. It's like being in a big, giant online bar full of single people, hopefully single.
So you meet five guys, the fifth guy.
Yeah, you make all these matches. And then I swear to God, if you're like a funny texter, you can really kill it on Tinder. Because if I get like a funny tagline from a guy, or if a guy's like really making me laugh with his text, and he's like got good grammar, good spelling, no typos, I'm sold.
I love that.
That's how you can tell I'm a writer too. I'm like, oh, if I get one "you're" instead of a "you are," I'm like, ugh.
Oh,
what an idiot.
So "you are" you don't like? The letter "u" and the letter "r" not working for you?
Oh yeah, no, I don't like it when people make those typos. I'm a little bit neurotic about typos.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I know. You know, if you've got a "your" where you should have a "u" apostrophe "re," I'm like, what a moron.
And how about if they use like LOL? Is that okay or no?
I'm fine with the LOL. I use the Bahaha myself. I like to spell out the laughter. B-A-H-A-H-A-H-A-H-A. Sometimes I make a typo in there and then it's like, ba-ja-ja-ja-ja.
Okay, so before we go into the whole world of Tinder and your crazy dates, let's go back and find out where this obsession with handwriting and grammar came from.
I don't know. Is it? Maybe it was from that 1 year in journalism. Because I feel like I'm really like, I like the writing to look good. I like it to...
Yeah, I don't think that. And what did you do? What was your family like? What would your parents do? Were they a school teacher in there somewhere?
No, man, not at all. My dad sells used cars. Like,
really?
Yeah, man. So
his whole life?
Yeah, man. That's it. He loves cars.
In
before
one
that,
place
he drove cab. Always in Vancouver.
Wow.
He loves cars. Like, he goes to car shows. He collects toy cars. Like, cars, he's very passionate about cars. In fact, do you know how much trouble I used to get in if I didn't, like, change my oil in my car?
But I'm fascinated by the stereotype of a used car salesman, because as soon as you say that, I think, oh, that's an odd profession to do for your life. But that's what he did.
Oh, he loves
it. Does he have his own lot? Or?
Yeah, man.
Okay.
So if anybody needs a car, call me in the Vancouver area.
Wild.
Please call me.
How do you start? You must need so much money to start up a business like that, like to get all those cars in the lot. Where does all that cash come from? I'm fascinated.
I have no idea, man.
Business.
From before my time.
Yeah, so it's just always been the way it's been, right?
Yeah, it's just the car biz.
Huh. And your mom?
Well, my mom works at Purelator. She didn't work when I was growing up. She was just like a housewife. That sounds so bad.
Yeah.
That's a big role to raise me and my sister.
Huge.
And then once we were kind of off in university, then she just got a job.
And were they into writing? Did they ever read your diary or encourage you?
God, I hope not. I don't even like them to read. I hope they don't even know where my blog is.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. I like to keep it a secret.
Okay. So you go to Carleton because so what was it? Was there a journalist that you kind of decided you wanted to be like, or did you have a vision of what journalism might be to you? Because I teach journalism students at West.
I can't really say I had a vision. Like, no. I can't. I just kind of did it, and it was just like a little morning ritual. Like, get up and write in my diary, and that's all it kind of was. Or a nighttime ritual when I was younger, right before bedtime. Like, I'd either read or write. But yeah, I can't really say I idolized anybody. I just enjoyed writing. Yeah.
And I've had students come into me in the program, probably like yourselves, more creative minded people, because journalism really, there's not a ton of room for creativity if you're a standard beat reporter. You're really just taking some facts.
That's true.
And turning them around. And there's not, there's a creative way and a smart way to do that, but it's not the sort of creative playfulness that you can get on stage. So I had a student once say to me, about a third of the way into the program, she goes, I don't know why they call this journalism. They should just call it news.
That's very true. I remember in my first year at Carleton, I had an assignment. We all had this assignment where we were supposed to write about any club on campus, right? So, like, if you want, like, maybe the GLBT or, like, a Foot Patrol, you know, or whatever kind of there's so many clubs, right? So I wrote a whole article on the club sandwich and went to every place on campus where you could get a club sandwich.
As a journalism instructor, I would love that.
Oh, I know. I did. I got an A on that. He was like, well, definitely not what I meant. But technically, you did write about
a club
on campus. So yeah, I was really proud of that one.
That's
though.
Fun. Yeah.
Right down to the bread, the cheese, how much mayo they slapped on it, how long it took me to get my club. Cool. You know, I really did some comparisons with the club.
Yeah. And then, but it just, you end up not working hard enough to get through it. You said you kind of.
There was only one class that was actually writing, and the rest were all like electives. So not electives, really, because you had to take like Canadian. I took political science, Canadian history. Okay. You know, it was like a lot of no offense, but it was a lot of boring classes too.
Sure. Yeah. Would you say it's a saving grace that you ended up not pursuing the rest of that journalism program?
Oh, for sure. Because I don't want to. I agree with your student. Like, I don't want to report the news. Like, you know, I like writing about life and, you know, my life and my point of view and just my observations. Like, and that is a very selfish writer's thing. And maybe that's why I've been blogging for like 8 months. And, you know,
well, it's hugely successful because you have something to say, right?
Yeah, it's been really fun. And like now I'm starting to get all these opportunities. And now like there's money coming into my life from my blog.
Right.
But it definitely was something I did for fun. And I didn't like I remember distinctively when I started blogging, somebody going to me, "Blogs are dead. Nobody reads blogs anymore."
That's funny.
Which was cool because then I was like, good, I'm just going to write. Like, nobody's going to read it.
Right. So you didn't mind that people were, because you just wanted
to express
yourself. I was
happy to think that nobody was reading it because then I could be super honest.
Yeah.
I could totally just be myself in my blog and I'd be like, oh, well, nobody's going to read it anyway.
So where did you find the space in your world? Where did you find the space in your world or in your life to feel, to be that honest? Because a lot of people write, and even with my podcast and stuff, there's things in my, like I do talk about my family a little bit. But I still draw the line with certain things. Where did you find that freedom to just deliberation to write whatever you want to write about?
I feel like it didn't even come to me until maybe like the longer I kept on blogging, the more and more honest I became. So I see, it's funny because when I went back and read the older ones, they seem a lot stiffer. Like I don't seem as honest.
You hadn't found
And
your
then
voice.
In number eight, I start to like my voice starts to come out more. It's just like anything in life. Like the more you do it, the better you get at it.
And when you say eight, is that Tinder date number eight? Is that how you refer to them?
Yeah, I'm on. This week I'm going to post 45.
Now I love the fact that you really know them by their numbers. Like
I don't remember them by their names. I know them by their numbers.
So if I just go 29, what would happen on 29?
Yeah, good old Nug. Yeah, I don't know.
Did you say Nug?
Yeah,
Nug in our gang.
Yeah.
Now how did you end up dating?
He was like, "Give me that Tinder date, damn it!" He was in my Tinder box.
So that's what happened. But he knew what he was getting himself into.
Oh yeah, a lot of guys do. A lot of guys want to go on the dates because they kind of want a review of their dating techniques.
Yeah.
They're like, "Can you please go on a date with me and tell me what I'm doing wrong?" And I was like, "Aw, don't be so pessimistic that you're dating wrong." But anyways, I'm a positive person. Most of the
You are. So listening to you and reading your stuff, you are like, I don't want to say rose colored glasses, but where does that come from? You are amazingly
I am a positive person. I was just born like that. Even Jen Grant's always like, you're like an anomaly. You're always happy, always seeing like the best in people.
I'm just going back to the used car salesman. Maybe that's your dad.
Maybe that does come from my dad. No, this tempo's amazing. Right? That is probably where I get it from.
Right.
No, you've never driven a Malibu before? You are missing out.
That's right.
That's true. My dates are the equivalent of my dad's Chevy Malibus.
Yeah, but once in a while, you are not the best dater either.
Like I know.
There was that date where you did with two dates in one night.
I know. Sometimes I can be the a-hole on the date.
Right.
That was kind of cheeky of me. There's been a few where I've been a bad date where, and then there's been a few where I've been like ditched. So then obviously I have to be like, then not that I want to write anything negative about the other person, but I'm like, oh crap.
I want to play the number game again. So 40, where are you at now?
I just went on my 45th date on Tuesday.
So 29 was Nug. So let's say, 17.
17. It might have actually been, That was the double.
Oh, that was the
double. So that was the pilot. Yeah.
He was the pilot.
Yeah.
So now, were you the bad date for the pilot? Because the first date
was
cool.
Yeah, because I totally showed up drunk. Because I'd already had a date right before that date. And I was like, I'd already had like three beers.
Yeah.
And I had like fucking, sorry, I probably should watch my language. Is this whatever? I don't
know.
Anyways, I probably had like barbecue sauce all over my clothes because we went for ribs. And I'm sure I was a disaster. When I got home that night and I took off my pants, I saw like I had food all over me.
Did you know in the second date that you weren't being a good, or did you think you were the life of the party?
No, I felt like, you know, sometimes I can be the life of the party if I have some drinks, but then sometimes I can hit a wall and get tired, right?
Of course.
Sometimes too many drinks aren't good. And yeah. I'm just like, I'm ready for bed now. And not the cool kind of bed that you want on a Tinder date. But I mean, like,
I'm ready to go home.
The pillow. Yeah, I'm ready to go home.
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
I just put on Twitter before I got out here that I was doing some research, and someone tweeted a question. Peg76. She says, have you ever kept in touch with any of your Tinder dates, and will she go out with any again? Which is a good question.
I do keep in touch with a lot of them, actually. And because I've done them all over the place, like, yeah. You know, I've done them in like Maui and England and Scotland and yeah. Halifax, Newfoundland, Vancouver, everywhere, like Ottawa, all these different cities. It's like, it's hard for me to really do a second date because it's like, I won't even be around for that long. Although I did go on a second date with a London guy because I was like, oh, he's great. Like sometimes you only really need, I like vacation flings. Like, you know, I like those ones that are like, they're self-contained. It's like you meet somebody, you have fun. Like, that's a good holiday for me. You have a vacation fling, but then you go home and it's over. It's
but
done.
Didn't this whole thing start from a vacation fling? I heard that you were in New York and you had a fling and you came back and you said, why can't I have this kind of a fling in my own town?
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what happened. In New York, I always have these epic flings. I meet great guys and it's fun. I have like this 3-4 day romance and then boom, it's done.
You're done. Yeah.
And, well, I mean, sometimes there's some weird pictures that get sent to you in the middle of the night, but whatever. Yeah. Other than that, it's done. But yeah, anyway, so I was like, why don't I ever do that in my own city? Because I didn't, and that's why I joined Tinder. But then then it's different, obviously, to have flings in your own city, because you might actually run into these people
of
again.
Course. Yeah. And does Tinder give you a license to do something, or no, does writing about your dates give you a license to do something you wouldn't normally do if you weren't writing about it? Do you feel, because now you're taking that journalist, you're sort of stepping outside and kind of reporting on your dates, you think that the fact that you're blogging and it gives you this license to do stuff in your psyche you might not have otherwise done?
I always ask myself that. Yeah. Of course, there's a few dates that are definitely like that where I'm like, would I have done that if I wasn't? Or is it the opposite where I can use my writing as a scapegoat for trying something I really want to try?
Yeah, so that's the fun thing about being a journalist.
Yeah, so it's been really interesting. And it's been so...
So what's the answer? Do you know the answer?
I really don't know the answer because it's partly like these are things obviously I'm curious about.
Yeah.
And maybe I wouldn't have gone there unless I was writing. And I do agree with that partially. But then it's also like, no, that's something I'm really curious about. And I'm just going to use my blog as like a scapegoat as to why I did it.
For sure. Oh, I had to do it. Yeah. And are there any, so we're talking about getting dates that progress sexually further. Cause most of them don't.
Yeah.
Most of them are just the first date where you go, oh, thanks.
Yeah.
That was nice. You know,
like I've only been on second dates with, I'm going to say two of them. I didn't sleep with anybody until number 18. It was funny because everybody reading the blog was like, you better bang one of these guys, otherwise I'm going to stop reading.
Oh, they were bored. The audience got bored.
Yeah, I don't know. It was more men that were probably mad that I was going out on so many dates
getting it on.
But it's like you can't help it. You like who you like and everybody else is like. And I was definitely I was a bit of a kissing bandit. I was still definitely like.
But that says something about just the dating process. Like, you had to date 18 guys before you actually found a guy that you liked enough to do that.
That's true.
For the single ladies in the house.
Like, you got to have some patience. Yeah, just be willing to go out and have fun and not necessarily, and don't get your hopes up that like your first guy is going to be like.
And say
best.
No 17 times.
Was that? Yeah.
So you're dating all these guys and you're writing about it. Did you go back to any other authors who wrote about sex? Like, I remember in the 90s, Anka Radakovich used to write, and I think she was in Spin magazine, and she had a column all about sex and sexual exploits. And in Canada, Josie Vogel, she's more of an expert. Yeah. He talks about sex and relationships. Nothing? Or Lisa Crystal Carver, another American zine girl.
I mean, obviously I love Sex in the City.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Does she count? I guess she counts, right? I don't know. Like, I love Sex in the City. Even though, like, I feel like her dating was a lot different because obviously it was 15 years ago.
Right.
So things are different now. And there's, like, obviously the online dating, and she didn't even have a cell phone for, like, the first five seasons.
Yeah.
I like reading a lot of books.
First person.
By female comedians.
Okay.
Although most of the books I've read are more about their life as comedian. But, you know, Chelsea Handler has that book, My Horizontal Life,
sure.
And it's all about her one-night stands.
Yeah.
And that's really fun. And she's funny, but she's obviously a lot more mean-spirited than me.
That's a good point.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you've got that, again, you've got that really friendly, everything's going to work out vibe to you.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Like, I probably won't have a boyfriend at the end of this. I'll just have a roster.
In 5 years from now, are you worried that this might haunt you in terms of other kinds of work?
I never even thought of that. I don't know why I'm not worried about it. Because in a weird way, all this, you know, all this kind of dating thing has kind of, you know, when you're trying to get jobs and people are like, do you have any samples of your writing? And that's like, oh, not like I've like, 20 years of diaries, but like, no, not really, you know? And so now all of a sudden I have, you know, I do. I have all these. I have like 75,000 words of my writing. If you want to check it out,
and an audience,
I have 12,000 readers on my Tumblr. It's hard to tell Google Analytics and Tumblr, but I know I have about 12,000 readers, which for a little girl like me
that's
just
huge.
Started writing something by myself in my bedroom one night, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah,
like you have that many readers, and they're from all over the world. Like I get messages from girls in Germany and Australia and the UK. It's so cool. And even in Italy, even some girl in Italy is like, I really want Tinder to take off in Italy. And I'm like, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Have the Tinder people ever approached you?
Yeah. He knows that Justin Mateen, the CEO of Tinder, knows what I'm up to too. And he loves it. He'll always, they always like things, and we communicate on Twitter and Instagram. And we even were having talks about they might sponsor a comedy tour. So we would do
a comedy tour of
comics that are all on Tinder. So yeah, we'd like go to different towns and we tell jokes and we Tinder it up after.
Going back to that 5-year question, in 5 years from now, do you see yourself being on stage more or writing more?
Writing more, for sure.
That's where you want
to
go.
Like I said, I do have a lot of projects on the line right now, and I am looking to turn this blog into a book.
Sure.
And then after I finished this book, or turned this one into a book, there was a book I was working on before, and that is a book more about my life as a stand-up comic, and I really want to finish that book.
So
after
is comedy for you sort of a way to fund your writing? Is that kind of what's going on, you think?
Yeah, because I mean, obviously, like the other book I was writing, I didn't even show to anybody, because it was never really part of a blog, really. So it's very unsatisfying to constantly be writing with no sort of and then when you're blogging, you're getting like immediate gratification because people are reading it and liking it, and so it's like then it drives you a little better. Do you know what I mean? Whereas the other book I've been working on for like 2 years, I hadn't showed anybody anything, and it was so hard to finish because it was like just writing and writing and writing with like no real response or commenting or anything like that. No.
And that's a story of your life in comedy?
Yeah. That's more of an autobiography of my life as a stand-up.
How's that go?
What was that?
how does that go? Is it to...
I know it'll be really fun when I'm all done it and stuff like that, but more ups and downs for sure. Because there's also a lot of crappy stories in it.
Do you find you fit in? How is it weird getting into that world of stand-ups? Or?
It's weird. When I first started in Ottawa, like I said, you're not at the... Like, I would go down to the comedy club and we'd hang out a lot. But definitely when I first started to hang out at Yuck Yucks, people never thought I was a comedian. They just thought I was like a comedian's girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
I know. And that's the bad thing. And it's funny because Tracy McDonald was like, oh, are you one of the comedian's girlfriends? And I was like, no, I'm a comedian. And she goes, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed I did that. Because when I first started comedy, somebody came up to me and said that.
Yeah.
And it was like, especially like that was... You know, the late 90s, and you know, in Ottawa too, there was like three female comics. So, but that was a great scene to come up with.
Well, Ottawa, I mean, I was in Ottawa when I was at Carleton. I used to help Howard with I was like the doorman and the ticket guy for two, three years. That's what I did.
Oh, wow.
So I was there during the Tom Green period.
Yeah.
I just got the tail end, or Mike McDonald would come by often. Ottawa produced, you know, Mike McDonald, Norm McDonald, Tom Green, John Doerr.
I know. I started with John Doerr.
Okay.
Like that was kind of our era, like the Casey Corbin, John Doerr, Jen Grant. Ben Miner,
his
last stuff on XM, Tracy McDonald, who like lives in LA now too. A whole bunch of us came up. It was just Steve Dillon. I don't know if you know all these cats, but just really good comics.
Oh, for sure. Ottawa has that reputation. And I think in large part because of Howard. He's such a hardworking guy.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Like I remember if you, and this is really funny because I don't think I've seen anybody lay down the law like this ever in my life since this era. But if you ran the red light, like say on a Wednesday night and you're like an amateur comic just trying to get stage time, if you ran the light like more than like 2 minutes, you got banned for like a month.
That's it. Yeah.
Can you imagine that? I know comics that run the light by like 15 minutes in Toronto.
No, Howard, he's got discipline.
Anyway, we have discipline.
And how does the Tinder stuff find its way onto stage in your comedy?
You know what's so funny is so far they've been pretty separated.
Yeah.
So it's like if you like my stand-up, you can go read my blog. If you like my blog, you can see my stand-up. So you're not seeing a lot of overlap. But I am starting to write more stuff about the Tinder dates because now I'm actually getting people coming to my shows from my blog.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah, you're drawing.
So, yeah. But then it might be confusing because I would say like the majority of the crowd doesn't really know about my blog.
Right.
So, but then I actually did a Tinder themed show last Saturday. So that was very fun because it was like all these people in the crowd were all on Tinder. And so we could really like have fun with the language and the game. And like, you really can.
Well, I love your Tinder joke. Tell, no, I don't want to ask you to tell
Oh, yeah. I can't do jokes off stage.
No, sorry. But it was a tweet.
Oh, which one was it?
My girlfriend got her Tinder picture on her toilet.
That was the best. Yeah, I just, she really did. I can show you the picture. Oh, yeah, that was a funny tweet. I just tweeted, yeah. I was like, my friend Sarah just changed her Tinder profile picture to a shot of her on the toilet. So if you see her, make sure you swipe front to back.
It's beautiful. That's such a joke for the digital natives. That's what the old folks call you guys. The digital, because I could put that on Twitter, and there are people my age who wouldn't have a clue because they don't know what Tinder is. And the swiping. Yeah, they just get out of it. That's a great joke, though. Yeah.
Thanks, man. Maybe I'll try that on stage today. Just see who gets it.
So as we wrap up, next 5 years, so more writing.
More writing. There is good stuff in my future right now.
Okay.
I will say that. Things are looking up.
That's exciting.
So yeah, but definitely like writing. Hopefully in 5 years, I will have at least one, if not two books out.
Two books.
Okay. That's the goal. And yeah.
And in terms of social media, because you have this large social media following, have you got into building an email list or any of that sort of stuff? Because
I'm a really bad businesswoman.
You're not leveraging it for business, are you?
I know. Yeah. And I don't even like have a website. Like, I'm pretty disorganized. Like, any stuff that I get is so fluky.
But that just makes you much more authentic.
I guess, yeah.
No, it does. So if a reader came and saw you had all these things and sign up for this and sign up for that and buy this, you know, then they start to question your stuff, you know? So
right.
Now you've actually almost completed your 50 dates and you're just doing a Tumblr. Anyone can do that.
Yeah.
It just makes you more of an authentic you are. It's not like it's clear that you're not doing this, or at least you didn't start doing it to try and leverage some sort of profit.
That's what one of my friends, Graham, said. He was like, when you read your blog, you don't seem like you're blogging for the sake of blogging.
Right.
Like, it's not like you're just trying to throw your voice, like, you know, it just seems like it's just you.
You hanging out, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's hard. Logan, when I started writing for this podcast, the beginnings, like, so when I was at CBC years ago, I used to write for celebrities. I was writing for them and they'd say what I was writing. And I'd never written for myself. So when I had to start writing my own stuff for the intros of the podcast, it was really hard to find my voice, exactly like you were talking about.
Yeah.
This first 18 being very, very stiff.
Yeah, I feel like I'm very stiff in the beginning. And then it just, like, then my voice just comes out. It's like I'm, you know, girls write me all the time. It's like, I feel like I'm having a conversation with you when I'm reading your blog. It's just like you. Like, it's.
And how long did it take you to find that confidence on stage?
Oh, as a stand-up? Oh, a long time too. It always does. Because I feel like when you first start to do stand-up, the goal is to be funny. And then when you just, like, learn to be yourself, then you actually end up being funnier. Because you're just so natural on stage.
All right. I think, I want to see you. I didn't get to see you in this fair city of ours, London.
It's, last night was really fun.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was
That's
fun.
Good to hear.
And then hopefully tonight's going to be equally fun. And then hopefully tonight I got some dudes in my Tinder box. Hopefully I'm going to get my
that
London Tinder.
Up?
There is a guy from my Tinder box that's coming out tonight. That'll be scary.
So
I've never
Tinder box means he's waiting to potentially be a date of yours.
Yeah, that means like we've made the match and we're communicating. But that's going to be really scary. Cause what if I bomb in front of him? That's not going to be good.
You don't know him at all.
I know, but I'll still be nervous.
So you have that, right?
I know. It's like whenever as a girl, probably as a guy comic too, but when somebody who you potentially want to date is watching you do stand up, it's like the stakes are just a little higher than performing for strangers. Cause you really want to impress just that one person.
That's so weird. And are you going to be able to date him while you're here on this trip? You'll date him next time you come around.
Well, hopefully it's just one of those things where we can go for drinks after my show.
Oh, okay.
So casual. Talk about my act. You'll be like, is it true? Yeah, unfortunately, it's all true.
All of it. Yeah, that's why it's good. Cool.
There it is. Now you know me.
So, Christina, good things coming in the future in terms of you said.
Yes.
Yeah. So the blog's going
I'm
well.
A lucky girl.
Yeah. Well, not lucky. It's hard work.
All right. I forget.
Now you just got it. Wait a sec. When your parents, what are they? They're going to see this.
Well,
I'm sorry to keep going back to that.
I know. Well, no, maybe they won't get the channel that I'll be on.
Oh, you're hilarious. You're going to have to come to terms with it somehow. What's the hardest thing? What's the hardest conversation you ever had? See, my little guy, what's he doing? Like, people around us have died of cancer. So he's asking about cancer. And I was like, oh my God, he's seven. Like, you don't want to start having those conversations.
Oh my God.
Do you remember any of those hard conversations you had with your parents? Because it sounds like
no,
it's going to be a hard conversation.
I skip them all. I just figure everything out on my own. Even when I moved to California for a guy I met in a nightclub in Las Vegas.
Oh no.
I moved from Ottawa to California. I didn't even tell my parents. And then my dad called my apartment in Ottawa and was like, oh, is Christina home? And then Kirsten, my roommate, is like, no, she just moved to LA, but if you talk to her, can you tell her Kirsten says hi? And then she didn't know it was my dad. And I was like, uh-oh.
So then he calls you up.
Yeah. And then they're like, where are you?
So that's the pattern. They'll find out.
I just like to surprise my parents. Keep them on their toes.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they love that. All right. Well, when the book gets onto the bestseller list.
Yeah, they don't go in chapters much.
That's hilarious. All right. Thanks, Christina.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, this is fun. Take care.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Well, there you go, Christina Walkinshaw. She is a lot of fun, I must say, and a hard-working woman who's been writing. And the great thing about that podcast is she really gave me the impression that her writing is just a routine. She used the word ritual. It's a morning ritual. So it's not work. And that's one of the key things, I guess, in the creative process is loving your work, because that's why we do it. We loved it when we started it. And if we turn it into a job, then I guess you got to get a hobby. So love what you do. Make it a ritual. And that leaves a space for the creative, you know, the creative part. If you're not wrestling with the actual physical time and labor, hopefully there's some room for the creative muse to play. Hey, by the way, thanks so much for listening. It'd do me a huge favor if you have a second. Go to iTunes and look up The Inadequate Life, this podcast, and leave us a rating or a review. Even better, subscribe. That helps us do better in the iTunes ranking, so more people will get to hear these stories and hopefully be inspired. My name is Keith Tomasek. Thanks for listening. See you in a couple of Mondays. Bye for now.